Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Former President Jimmy Carter has become convinced that deprivation and abuse of women and girls is the most serious and most unaddressed problem in the world and results from a false interpretation of carefully selected religious texts. President Carter is here in our studio to talk about that and more, including perhaps why he sends snail mail, not email, to world leaders, which he said on television the other day. You can probably guess why. His new book is A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. Mr. President, an honor. Welcome to our Varick Street home.
It's good to be with you again, Brian. Thank you.
You and I have spoken about religion before in the context of your faith and your lifetime of teaching the Bible. So why point to religion now as a prime cause of what you call the most serious problem in the world?
Well, religion and violence are the two generic causes of the abuse of women and girls around the world. And it's a misinterpretation of some of the scriptures that result in abuse of women and derogation of them in the eyes of men because they are convinced that women are inferior in the eyes of God. And for religious people even, that are Christians, for instance, we know that Jesus Christ, in his ministry and his words, all the recorded words, he never discriminated against women. In fact, he exalted women far above what they had ever been previously in history. But even in the New Testament, where St. Paul began to write to the early churches, he wrote to individuals, sometimes little tiny churches that had 20 or 30 members, and some of his verses can be interpreted either way. So for the first three centuries in the Christian church, at least, women played an equal role, as Paul points out in his 16th chapter of Acts. But after that, the men who ran the church began to say, why don't we select other verses which show that women are not qualified to be priests or deacons in the church?
And Can you give me an example of either of these verses on either side of this?
Well, yeah. In fact, Paul said to one of his small churches that women should always never adorn themselves, that women should be silent in church. And there's even a verse that says women shouldn't teach men. But on the other hand, he said that in the eyes of God, men and women are equal, as are slaves and masters and are Jews and Gentiles. They are equal in the eyes of God. And as I just mentioned in the 16th chapter that I mentioned, he lists about 25 people who were preeminent in leadership roles in the early church, and about half of them are women by name. So you can interpret it either way you want to if you have a preference. But there are 36,000 verses, more or less, in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew text, and in the New Testament. So you can interpret any way you want to.
In today's world, is this mostly a radical Islam problem? Certainly we can find the conservative Christian and the history you were just describing, or the Orthodox Jewish, or other religions practices that are sexist and cause harm to women and girls. But maybe there's nothing like the terrorist attacks and other military campaigns aimed at depriving girls in education and other things, Taliban, things going on in Nigeria, et cetera, a tiny minority of Muslims, we should say, involved in global terms, but still at a unique scale and intensity compared to other religions?
Well, I've studied the Quran probably more than most people have in the United States that are not Muslims. When they were holding our hostages in Iran, I really made a dedicated effort to understand the Quran. And I had experts come into the Oval Office and teach me about the nuances of it. And it's very difficult to find a verse in the Quran that doesn't emphasize the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah, as interpreted by Muhammad. But obviously, they are interpretations of that by the Taliban and others that deprive women of an equal right. Most of the problems that that afflict women and girls are not from the religious text, but sometimes that's the basis for them, as I've already mentioned. But for instance, I'd say the worst unknown crime against women and girls is the murder of little girls by their parents. When a girl is born, they strangle her because they want a boy. And now with the advent...
For economic reasons?
For economic reasons, and also because some countries like China and India and others have put a limit on the total size of families. One is best, two is most. And so if they only have one child, they want to make sure that it's a boy. And also they don't have Social Security like we do, so they want boys in the family so they can earn a living to support the parents when they're old age. So they look at a family... in an area of poverty, and they say, we can only feed two children, so they strangle the rest of them. There's a new movie out called It's a Girl. It was premiered in November. There's a mother in India who very proudly says, in effect, that she strangled eight daughters when they were born because she had to have a son. And we know that in many areas, if there's only one opportunity to send a child to school, they send the boy. If they have a limited amount of food, the boys get first choice. And the other thing is that there are now about 160 million missing girls on Earth because either the baby at birth or the fetus in a selective abortion have been eliminated. And this has resulted in China and India, in effect, in a very great shortage of women to be married to men or to satisfy the men's sexual desires in a brothel and so forth. And this is another ancillary terrible problem about it.
My guest is former President Jimmy Carter. His new book, A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. And listeners, President Carter will take some phone calls here today. If there is anything you've always wanted to ask Jimmy Carter, but he wasn't around your dining room table, now's your chance. 212-433-WNYC. And this can be on his book, A Call to Action, or anything else from World Affairs Today or even from his presidency. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Of course, we'll ask you to keep your questions brief and to the point, and we'll see if we can get some of you in here for Jimmy Carter, former President of the United States, on the phones. 212-433-9692. Am I right that you and Mrs. Carter left your Christian denomination of 70 years over women's issues?
Yes. In the year 2000, the Southern Baptist Convention deviated from its previous policy and ordained that women, in being inferior, could not occupy the positions of pastor or deacon or chaplain, and they also even ordained it in some of the seminaries, which is the higher education level of a Southern Baptist church, that women couldn't even teach boys in a classroom.
So it's not even just that they're not coming along as fast as some other denominations. It's that even in the post-feminist era, if you will, they went the other way.
They went the other way in the year 2000, and so my wife and I left the Southern Baptist Convention. We now belong to a Baptist church where I teach Bible lessons every Sunday, as a matter of fact. And we've had women pastors, and my wife is a deacon. The chairman of our board of deacons the last time was a woman, and we have a majority of deacons who's a women. So we treat men and women equally, which I believe that Jesus Christ always exemplified and promulgated as his policy.
Gee, if they don't want women teaching men and boys, maybe we can get more males into the teaching profession.
Well, you certainly can in the Southern Baptist Seminary.
I guess so, if nowhere else. Mr. President, put on your headphones, and you can hear some of our callers that way. Our lines are already full at 212-433-WNYC. And maybe we can get somebody to come and help you with those headphones. We're going to get a producer in here to help untangle those phones. Oh, now you got them. All right. Kevin in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC with President Jimmy Carter. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Good morning, Kevin.
Hi, President Carter. My question is based upon your book, and it's based upon where does the solution begin? Because obviously it's not a denouncing of religion, but it's looking for a change in views and how scriptures are interpreted.
That's true, Kevin, and I want to point out that in the book there are 23 different specific recommendations that I give to assuage the abuse of women all over the world. And it ought to start in our own country, because here we have a terrible abuse of women and girls. For instance, in our two most respected, institutions, the university system and in our military, that's where sexual abuse is most prevalent and is least brought to the attention of authorities. because a college president and the deans of a college, even Emory University where I teach or Harvard or whatever, they don't want to have a reputation in their universities that sexual abuse is increasing. And we know that in the year 2000, where statistics have been promulgated, the same thing has applied in the military. 26,000 cases of sexual abuse were finally revealed when the military was forced to do so. Only about 300 of those resulted in a conviction or punishment of the rapist, which is about 1%. And in a college campus, only about 4% of the total rapes are reported to the authorities, which is about 1/6 as much as takes place within the general population. So the United States has a long way to go to correct these problems, and I certainly don't want to say I'm a very devout Christian. I think that if we all turn to the teachings of Christ, as I just said, we would be very open and dedicated to the equality of treatment of women and would correct the problem that exists.
Jim in Bricktown, you're on WNYC with former President Carter. Hello.
Hello, and a great honor to talk to President Carter. I was over the weekend, there was online a projected piece of legislation in Iraq to allow men to marry girls as young as 9. And one of the projected responses was sanctions. And I was wondering, well, first of all, Iraq had sanctions between the first Gulf War and the second incursion. So do sanctions work, or would they make the country more isolated and culturally backward?
Jim, we have had Carter Center programs in 79 different countries on Earth, and we've gotten to know what goes on in those countries. And quite often, if there's a local cultural commitment, like to circumcising girls or mutilating their genitals, or to promote multiple marriages or to marry their children, an outsider who tries to make them change, quite often that's counterproductive. It's better for them to change on their own. As a matter of fact, there are about 125 million girls who are married at an age all the way from 8 years old up to early teens each year. And this is accepted in many cultures around the world. And I think that this is something that it would not be resolved, to answer your specific question, by any kind of sanctions or punishment from outside to that culture.
Former President Jimmy Carter here, his new book, A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. And let me touch on a few other current issues with you, if I might. And speaking of macho men and sanctions for that matter, how do you see Vladimir Putin in historical terms? You were president during the Cold War. Is he the latest expression of a centuries-long Russian expansionism, or how do you see Putin in historical terms?
Well, in a way, I see him similar to what I saw Brezhnev when I was president, when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, and I wanted to make certain that they didn't go any further. So I immediately withdrew the American ambassador. I declared an embargo against Russia, Soviet Union then. I approved the action of the Congress and the Olympic Committee to withdraw from the Olympics, which is very important to them.
1980 Olympics.
Yes, and recently to Putin. And I also let Brezhnev know with a public statement that if he went any further than Afghanistan, that we would take military action to stop that invasion. And then we began secretly to give weapons to the freedom fighters in Afghanistan, which eventually resulted in the Soviets having to withdraw under Gorbachev. Putin was dedicated to taking over Crimea. I don't think that any outside force could have prevented that taking place because most of the Crimeans wanted to go into the Russian orbit. But I think that now he has to be stopped. And I watched with great attention last week, I think, when he made a speech saying we're not going to do that in eastern Crimea. Eastern Ukraine. But Crimea is going to be part of Russia, no matter what anybody on the outside does. I think that what Putin is going to do now is try to woo the people in eastern Ukraine who are Russian-speaking and so forth with blandishments, with good trade, with loans and grants, easy traffic to and from Russia and so forth. I think he's going to try to seduce them to believing that they will be better off in an alliance with Russia than the West.
You know, some people say the current crisis is as much the West's fault for pushing NATO membership all the way to Russia's doorstep since the Cold War and boxing Russia in and making it feel defensive. Do you support that theory at all?
I can see the justification for the theory, with which I don't agree. As I mentioned earlier, I believe that Putin was dedicated to taking Crimea no matter what happened. And I don't think that anything could have deterred him from doing so.
Mina in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Jimmy Carter. Hello, Mina.
Good morning, and thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'm just calling to really sincerely thank the president for being so active in helping all over the world and also being a superb human being. And thank you for this opportunity for giving to me to express my feeling towards him. I love him. And God bless you and keep you safe and healthy for the rest of your life.
Well, thank you. That's the kind of question I like.
Yeah, you got a big smile out of Jimmy Carter, Mina.
Oh, I love him. I just love him. Kiss him for me.
I'll let that be a virtual kiss. Maybe I'll give him a hug. Pamela in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Pamela.
My question is this. As a humanitarian, I'm wondering how you feel about the law whereby corporations have been designated as people.
I don't agree with it at all. I think one of the worst mistakes that the Supreme Court of the United States has ever made as far as political justification and equality in our country is to declare that corporations are the same as human beings. And the Citizens United ruling, I think, has been one of the major causes of an almost total deadlock within the Congress when massive amounts of money, some of it coming from overseas, can be poured into the campaigns to be spent mostly on negative advertisements. So I think it was a devastating blow to the integrity of our democratic system.
Pamela, thank you. You told NBC on Sunday that you use snail mail, old-fashioned paper letters, to communicate with world leaders because you think the NSA is spying on your electronic communication. Did you think that before Edward Snowden?
Yes, I did. You know, when I was president, I was very concerned about the intrusion on private affairs of the intelligence agencies of our country. I knew what was going on as president. So I sponsored the passage of the bill known as the FISA Act, which meant that the intelligence agencies couldn't interrogate or intercede any sort of communication between two American citizens unless applying to an individual citizen, they got a ruling from the justices that were appointed that it was necessary for security reasons. But then I think after 9/11, my FISA Act was completely distorted and liberalized so that it made possible additional intrusions. Some of the members of the Congressional Intelligence Committees understood, but most of the members of the House and Senate didn't even know what was going on. And I think that NSA and others have gone even beyond that in liberally interpreting the law that did exist. I think that the recommendations of the 40 or so distinguished members that President Obama appointed, I hope they'll be carried out. And I noticed that in the news this morning, he's going to stop the recording of almost every telephone call or email message in America, which has been going on and been retained by the NSA.
And so you would support that? As the New York Times describes it this morning, the president would end the NSA systematic collection of data, as you say, about Americans' calling habits. Those bulk records would stay in the hands of the phone companies, which would not be required to retain the data for any longer than they normally would, and the NSA could obtain specific records only with the permission of a judge using a new kind of court order. Is that good in your opinion? I guess you're saying it is. Does it threaten our national security at all, which is the concern on the other side?
I don't think it does, and I would go even further than that. I don't think that the NSA ought to record every message, even if they turn it over to the private telephone companies. I don't think they ought to record my messages when I want to communicate with my grandchildren or with another politician.
And they're not recording the messages, right? They're recording what number called what number, when and for how long.
But if they want to go back and get that message, they can tell exactly what you said. And I think that kind of thing ought to be severely limited.
Jane in Park Slope, you're on WNYC with Jimmy Carter. Hello.
Hi. Hi, fellas. And Jimmy, God bless you for the wonderful things you've done around the world for over the years. You're going to the top of heaven in my book.
Thank you, Jimmy.
I hope, especially since you're touching on issues that affect women around the world, I hope that something can be done in Western countries to counter the problems I see, especially for young women, that are caused by the media's heavy influence on sexual activity, and also the use of younger and younger girls and young women in advertising and pornography.
And Jane, forgive me, I'm going to leave it there and get President Carter's reaction to your critique of U.S. media.
Jane, one of the things that I haven't mentioned yet that takes place in the United States is a horrible degree of slavery. And that results indirectly, at least, from what you just described. We have a terrible number of young girls that are sold into slavery in this country every year, according to the statistics from the U.S. State Department, about 100,000. And this, the worst place on America for young girls to be sold into slavery is in Atlanta, Georgia, because we have the largest airport on earth. And we also have passengers coming in from the poorer countries in the southern hemisphere, in Latin America and Africa and so forth. And an average girl can be got into slavery and sold in Atlanta for $1,000. If they come from Europe and so forth, it costs up to $8,000. And the New York Times last week had a report that the prostitution industry in Atlanta alone was $290 million a year. And so this is what's happening in our country. So slavery now far exceeds what it did in the 19th century as far as the number of dollars involved, about $32 billion, and the number of people who are actually in slavery, which is now about 29 million in the world.
We actually talked about this on yesterday's show with the author Holly Austin Smith, who just wrote a book about sex slavery in the United States.
In the United States. And we could
among underage girls, among children, really. And but when you say slavery,
yeah,
people will think of the plantation system before the Civil War. What does slavery in 2014 that you're referring to look like?
These are people living in bondage where they don't have any control over their own activities and they're forced by a master who dominates them.
In the United States?
Yes, in the United States and around the world, of course. But I'm talking about the United States right now. But a woman, a young girl who's sold into slavery, has no control over her activities. She's a victim of a brothel owner or a pimp. And she's also a victim of the male customers who frequent her and pay her to do it. And there's hardly a whorehouse or a brothel in America that's not known by the existing authorities. The mayor, the city council, the policemen know when a house of prostitution exists. And quite often the policemen in charge of that particular block or street, they either get paid a bribe or they look the other way. Or they are given sexual privileges free. And so this is something that we need to do. In America, we're particularly vulnerable because 50 times as many prostitutes, the innocent girls quite often, are arrested as are brothel owners or pimps or male customers. In other countries like Sweden, they now do not ever arrest a prostitute, but they do arrest male customers as well as pimps and brothel owners. And that is really working in reducing the level of prostitution.
We have just a few minutes left with former President Carter. I know you have to go to your next appointment. In fact, is it a book appearance?
Yeah, this will be my first book signing, as a matter of fact, at Barnes & Noble.
Which Barnes & Noble? Do you know?
Let me
see if we can get – we're going to look it up and tell everybody where you can meet President Carter at noon, I think. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Just tell me briefly, on John Kerry's negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians, do you see success as possible?
I think it's possible, yes. And I think John Kerry's made the most notable effort maybe in the last 15 years or so. And he's been now recently, I think, we've seen some signs that President Obama is supporting him in a more public way. But I'm really filled with admiration and gratitude to John Kerry for his great effort.
A big concern for the Israelis is always that if they give up military control of the West Bank, a Palestinian army or police force will not be willing to dismantle terrorist cells that still want to attack Israel. Gaza, after Israeli withdrawal, is unfortunately seen as a cautionary tale. What provision in a treaty do you think could address that major stumbling block?
I think the Palestinians will accept a demilitarization of the Palestinian state. I think they will also accept troops being sent in from the United States and from Europe and even from Israel to make sure that there's no violence that is organized or directed against Israel. And I don't think it's necessary for the Israeli military to retain control over all of the West Bank, including the eastern area of it, that in the Jordan River Valley.
One more call to wrap it up. Don in New Milford, you're on WNYC with President Carter. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Letter. Hello, Mr. President.
Good morning. Good Don.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity. President Carter, I voted for you. I think you're a wonderful person.
Thank you for that.
And the things you do for people are amazing. Your naval service, I always got very interested in that. What years did you serve in the Navy, President Carter?
I served in the Navy from 1943 until 1953, and I was on battleships and three submarines, and I spent the last part of my career as a submarine officer.
I have one more question, President Carter. Did you once say that you witnessed a UFO in Puerto Rico?
I witnessed a UFO in South Georgia, but it was an unidentified flying object, and I've made reports on that a lot of times. It was just a light in the sky that looks about like the moon that changed the colors and then disappeared, and we never did identify what that object was, but I don't claim that it came from outer space. I don't claim that it was a vehicle or something like that, but it was unidentified, it was flying, and it was an object.
October 1st this year will be your 90th birthday. Considering the seriousness of the problems you document in your new book, do you think humanity has made real progress during your lifetime toward becoming a race of just and merciful beings? Or are we simply who we are, no more compassionate, no less warlike, because that's human nature?
I think there are more wars going on now, either bilateral wars or ones quite often initiated from America, than there were before the United Nations was formed. And I also think that the selective abortion of girls has resulted in a much more wide death rate among little girls than it was, say, 50 years ago. In some areas, we're making progress, obviously, more equality of treatment, but I don't think that the world in general has improved itself on the treatment of girls and women.
Former President Jimmy Carter, his new book, A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. President Carter will be at the Barnes & Noble at 555 Fifth Avenue. That's Fifth Avenue and 46th Street, doing that book signing at noon. So good luck on your commute. And such an honor to have you in our studio here at WNYC. Thank you very much.
I'm on the way. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll look at a new study that seems to suggest that parents helping their kids do their homework and other parental involvement in your children's studies does not help them in school. We'll see what they argue. Stay with us.